You've heard her product reviews.
Before, during, and after photo, so I'm gonna post it for you so that you guys can really see the difference that it actually makes.
Travel updates and farm dispatches on the Crystal Cattle accounts.
John and I like to go on vacation and we're at the beach and we're doing cool things. This is what nights look like. Excuse my language. Freaking zapped by the electric fence, like voltage through me.
So who is this entrepreneur, farm girl, and Canadian now in Northeast Iowa? Meet Crystal Blinn on this installment of the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa Public Television and the Market to Market TV show. I'm Paul Yeager. Enjoy our conversation with Crystal Cattle.
When you wake up in the morning, the first social media you check is?
Instagram.
Every single time?
Yes. I'm a social media junkie, but I specifically really love Instagram. I think it's because of the visual aspects of it, and I follow a really wide variety of people, anything from those that are also in agriculture to fashion bloggers to inspirational speakers and motivators. So I find my feed very inspiring when I wake up in the morning.
So it's about the feed. I have to admit, I usually will look at stats at things. Do you look and see how things perform too of your own?
Yes. So I typically post a lot of my photos on Instagram in the evenings. It seems like that's a time when a lot of people are winding down from their day, and so they are doing the scroll. And so I will admit, I'm checking, you know, that photo that I posted the night before for likes, but even more specifically, comments.
Yeah.
Because I'm a strong believer in that we need to make social again. And that's one of the other reasons why I've loved Instagram so much is the connections that I've really made with the people on that platform. And so sometimes those comments are right under that photo and we can start that conversation. And then a lot of times the comments are coming from a direct message because maybe somebody has a question that they want to keep a little bit more private, or they saw one of my Instagram stories, which I also love, and a question or an idea has been brought on by that story that I'd posted the previous day.
Okay, so you hit a couple of things there about, I think, how I discovered who you were. So on the Market to Market Instagram account, I primarily operate that, and it came up as a recommendation, and I don't know if it's because of it was geographical or if it was just the name cattle, and that's in your name on Instagram, and I see that, and then all of a sudden I see a town I'm very familiar with on your story, and I'm like, well, I know a lot of people from Buchanan County, and this is Independence. I know exactly where that is, and stumbled upon that, so I have to admit that's how I'm usually kind of interested. Especially when you go downtown shopping in Independence. Have you found and connected with anybody that's really hyper local to where you live?
Oh, all the time. That's one of the, I think, hidden gems of Instagram is actually being able to find people via location. And I use that a lot. I am actually not a native to Buchanan County or Independence. It's the town that my husband grew up in. Originally, I am from Canada and made my way to the States because of college and met John at a cattle show. And so that's how I ended up here in Northeast Iowa. So I love being able to use social media to find like-minded people in my area. And my husband always gives me a hard time when I talk about my, and if you saw me in person right now, I'd be using air quotes, my friends. And he's always like, are these like really your friends? Like, have you met them in person or are they just your social media friends? And often they're a combination. I'm getting to know different individuals online first, and then I love it when I get to meet those people in real life and we get to even deepen that friendship.
And that's how you've established new friendships. So I think you said you were born in Canada. Is that right?
Yes. My whole family is from Alberta specifically, and I grew up on a purebred Simmental operation. My family still has cattle up there, and I still love going back home.
And you end up in Kansas to go to school. What's that pipeline like from Alberta to Manhattan?
There's actually a lot of opportunity with livestock judging scholarships, I found out. And thankfully, I had some friends of mine that were a little bit older that had been showing cattle and in 4-H programs, and they had came to the States on livestock judging scholarships. And they really encouraged me to take that leap. I ended up actually going to a community college called Butler that's just outside of Wichita in El Dorado, Kansas, first for 2 years.
Okay.
And then I transferred on to Kansas State, where again, I was also a part of their livestock judging team and finished up my ag communications and animal science degrees there.
So we just had an analyst, longtime analyst on our television show, Walt Hackney, was on the livestock judging team. And after he had passed at Okie State, his alma mater had posted a picture of a young strapping Walt Hackney in the class of 58 or 59's judging team. Are there photos of you and your judging team? And I'm guessing they look dramatically different in the 30 to 40 years since you went, since he went to when you went. What was the judging team like? Who made up the team?
What I loved about my judging team at Butler was, ironically, that year, none of our teammates were from Kansas. We were all out-of-state kids, and then I was the out-of-country kid. But that created a really unique opportunity, because when we did have a weekend available, and you know, it was Thanksgiving or Easter or something like that, so a short holiday that I wasn't going to fly back home from, I would jump in a truck and head to Texas or Colorado or New Mexico and go and see these different parts of the country and get to meet my teammates' families, which I thought was amazing, because agriculture for me in Alberta, and then I was really getting exposed to it in Kansas, is very different than other parts of the United States. It's a lot of work to be on a livestock judging team. Essentially, it's no different than having a basketball scholarship,
right,
or a volleyball scholarship. You're on the road all the time. You have practice, and then you're expected to maintain an academic standard also. So there's really this camaraderie, and it also kind of begins to become its own fraternity of people. When I see others that have been on livestock judging teams, I really have a lot of respect for the work and the time and the effort that they put into that activity.
What's your specialty?
Well, I would say cattle, because I grew up with cattle, but my coach always said that I had way too much of an own personal opinion.
Sometimes when you have a background in it, sometimes you might not be the most open-minded to things, I would imagine. You have biases or preferences that, not in a bad way, but just that's your background. So your coach was trying to steer you somewhere else?
Well, it ended up being that I was the best in hogs, which again is a little bit ironic, because in Canada there is no show hog industry. I had never seen a real pig show until I went to the Kansas State Fair. But I fell in love with it, and I always tell my husband one day, you know, if we have children, we've got to show pigs at some point. So that was a lot of fun, and I had amazing coaches. Chris Mullinex was my coach at Butler, who is now actually the head coach at Kansas State. And then while at Kansas State, I had Dr. Scott Shockey as our head coach and Brandon Callis as our assistant grad coach. And it was just such an amazing opportunity to learn from those gentlemen.
And how many were male and how many were female on your team?
Our teams both at Butler and Kansas State were about split half and half. So my coaches were always males, but I think that's the one thing that you really find in the livestock judging circles is it's an even playing field, and you watch both women and men rise to the top. It's really about who has the talent and who is willing to work the hardest and put in the most effort.
When's the last time you've done livestock judging?
Well, I would say I feel like it happens every day when I'm out on the pasture. And often I think we're most critical of our own cattle. But I've had some opportunities, probably when I was a little bit more younger, to do more livestock judging in an actual show ring setting. What I really just love evaluating cattle, and my husband is, we raise Hereford cattle, and he is incredible with pedigrees and looking at genetics. So I think we make a really good combination, because for us it is important to know what the performance and looking at EPDs and looking at those pedigrees on cattle, but we also want cattle that look good and are very functional. So together I think we make a really good team for our farm and trying to raise really high quality Hereford cattle.
Where's the majority of your Herefords end up?
We really focus on the female side of our herd. We will keep 3 to 4 bulls each year. We've been consigners for, or at the Iowa Beef Expo Hereford sale for several years now. So that's where a lot of our bulls will be marketed through. Then our females will go to a combination of keeping our own replacements for our herd, as well as being shown as 4-H or FFA projects or through the Junior Hereford program. But for us, something that's really, really important is that those kids have fun and excel with those females in the show ring, but they have to go on to make cows for them after the show career is done. John and I both had really successful careers in our junior shows, and it was fun to take home those banners, but it was the kind of cattle that we were raising that excelled in the show ring and then afterwards went on to produce high-selling bulls, embryos that could be marketed, additional females, and that's really where we generated the funds to put me through college and to help us buy our first farm. So that's something that when we're talking with our customers, both, you know, the kids that'll be in the show ring and their parents, we really want them to find a female that will have longevity and that they can build a herd off of.
Now, your husband's farm, you said he was a native of that area, Buchanan County area. So what was his farm like growing up?
Well, interestingly enough, John actually didn't get into the agriculture industry until he was a teenager. His grandpa had grown up on a farm when he was younger, but then actually got into the manufacturing business. And they grew a very successful plastics business that had manufacturing plants all over the United States. So as John was growing up, he really thought that he eventually would be involved in that family business, but they then sold it. And at that point, his dad and grandpa really decided that they wanted to get into farming and cattle. And that's when John's love of Hereford cattle began. And now today, his dad and grandpa no longer have their Hereford operation. So it's just John and I with the cattle. We own a small amount of cropland ourselves, and then John does manage the family farm, which is heavily corn with some soybeans mixed in as well.
Is that enough to kind of keep the operation fed, or I mean, you're trying to market some of that as well off farm?
Oh, the majority of it would be marketed off farm. Especially with really, so what we consider blend farms, which is more the family enterprise, all of that is marketed. A lot goes down to Quaker Oats in Cedar Rapids. And then what we are, for our own operation, most of it is marketed. And we actually have put 30 acres back into grass. It's a transition that we're going through. And I would think we're probably one of the only people in the county that has done that in several years. But the cattle are really a passion for us. And so to get a little bit more grassland is certainly important and exciting for us.
Well, right. Do you mean that that's more of the pasture area or just grass itself?
It will be pasture, grazing grass for our cattle.
Okay.
We have some opportunity to buy hay in our area. So, you know, the longer that we can keep those cows out on pasture, the better. But thanks to good old Iowa winters, which I am accustomed to of Canadian winters, we end up feeding cattle a good chunk of the year also.
Well, and it's a never-ending job with those animals. And I know, now, did the two of you meet at a show? Or how does that?
We did.
Okay.
We met out at Denver Stock Show.
Oh, the Denver Stock Show.
Yes. Yeah, so each January, kind of the Super Bowl of cattle shows. At that point, I was actually working for the American Angus Association, and John was out there with their family's ranch. And we knew of each other, but met through college friends. And about a year and a half later, I was up here in Independence.
And it's funny, you go there and I leave the area. It's the way things have gone. What have you found about what is similar? Buchanan County, Iowa, is similar to what other areas you've lived? Let's talk just the way it looks, first of all.
Well, I would say from where I grew up, the part of Alberta that I grew up in is much more cattle country, pine trees, aspens. We can't see the mountains from where we are at. We're about 3-4 hours away from the mountains. So we're kind of in that transition area. There still was a lot of crops where I grew up, oats, barley, canola, but nothing like Iowa corn, especially like Northeast Iowa corn. Mm-hmm. Then moving to Kansas, I loved the Flint Hills. I think that's just an incredible part of the country.
Absolutely.
If, you know, everybody should take an opportunity at some point to drive through the Flint Hills. And the amount of rangeland and native grasses, it's just incredible. And I loved that part of the country. And actually, that reminds me very much of southern Alberta, kind of Calgary area. So geographically, they looked similar. And there, you know, a lot of my classmates that were from Kansas, you know, they maybe grew some sorghum or corn and did a lot of grazing on stocks. And me being a cattle girl, I just thought, you know, that was awesome. So here I come to Northeast Iowa and we are surrounded by corn. And I'm thinking, you know, we can graze stocks and do all these things that, one, I saw my classmates do. And then, of course, you learn in college in a classroom setting. So it's going to make sense in the real world. And, you know, I'm telling John all of these ideas. And he's like, okay, one, you try and find a fence line. And two, he's like, there's this thing called compaction. And he's like, you try and find a farmer that's going to let you graze stocks on his cornfield. So it was a little bit of a eye-opening experience to just see how different agriculture can vary really essentially within the Midwest.
Yeah. And we're not talking major changes. I mean, we're talking a few hundred miles is really the difference there between the two sites. So you mentioned shows and things like that. Do you still get back to Denver every year? Do you try to go to to that show, or has your show days kind of behind you?
We still go every year. We haven't taken cattle ourselves to show, John and I together, but we really use it as an opportunity to go see, you know, what new genetics are out there, how genetics are performing, and then also from the networking standpoint. We also show every year at the Iowa State Fair, and then we this past year took cattle for the first time to the American Royal in Kansas City also.
Okay. Well, I'll have to track you down at the State Fair when you exhibit there. What has been... Let's not talk show area. Let's talk about the business side. What are some of the successes right now working for you?
Well, I think one thing that John and I feel really passionately about is the relationships within business. And I think this is something that whether you're in agriculture or not, whether you are marketing purebred cattle or another species or crop ground, we feel very strongly it's all about the relationships. And you can go and buy great quality Hereford cattle from lots of people in Iowa or all over the United States. And a lot of them will actually be very similar genetically because of work that we can do with artificial insemination and embryo transfer. So why are you going to choose to buy cattle from JJB Cattle Co. versus, you know, the operation down the road? And we really feel that we can provide additional value in terms of, you know, helping those young people prepare those projects, helping them get ready for that show, knowing about the scholarship and leadership opportunities that are out there, and really forming a relationship with our customers. And I think that that is important no matter what kind of business you are in. One, you have to have a quality product to start off with, but then after that, people buy from people, and they buy from people that they know, like, and trust. And so that's something that we really pride ourselves in. And we love those show families. John and I don't have children yet ourselves. So when we can get, you know, a bunch of those kids that have bought heifers from us and have them spend time with us in the barn during the summers, or we go watch them show and exhibit at their county fair or the National Junior Hereford Show, that's a really fun experience for us.
That's an absolute way to give back and help the next generation.
Absolutely. John and I have received so much from those that went ahead of us in junior livestock programs and agriculture. And I think about, you know, coming from Canada, then being down here, you know, all the people that introduced me to so-and-so to help, you know, make a connection or to let me know about the next opportunity. And so I'm very passionate about giving that back to, you know, peers or other people in our community or the next generation.
All right. So relationships are a positive. What's been a challenge here lately for you?
Oh, I think that's a great question. I think it's, really, let me think here for a second. You might have to pause.
I'm not saying you have to out the whole operation, but I mean, you know, yeah. We hear it week to week about, you know, well, it's feed this, it's opportunities for a market here. I mean, you're in a different, you're not selling for an end consumer to Tyson. You're selling, you know, the product to make the animal. So, I mean, I would imagine your challenges are things that people just don't always realize, I guess, is kind of what I'm asking you there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that does kind of spur a thought that I think our challenge is that because we have purebred cattle and we are a smaller operation, we run about 30 mama cows. So, I mean, we are small in kind of the purebred cattle deal. And so even though our target is for a lot of our cattle to go on and be successful in the show ring, to also make sure that people know that we still want our cattle to be incredibly high quality eating experience, if that's the route that they end up going their progeny that goes towards. And so John and I really feel that you can have a combination of that. And we think really that's what all cattlemen should be focused on the purebred sector is, yes, the show ring is fun and we want to be successful in that area. But we also want that bull's, you know, sons and daughters that may end up in a feedlot situation, we still want that to be incredibly high quality beef. Or, you know, if we have a influx of bulls that year and we decide we are only going to keep three of the eight bulls that we have, we want those bulls that are going to go and be fed out as steers. Again, we want those to be, you know, high marbling, high yield. And again, just a really good experience eating experience mm-hmm. for our customer. And so sometimes I think when people just see, oh, well, they're a purebred and they want to attach the word show operation, they don't understand that we still are ensuring that we have those really high quality genetics.
So the genetic side of this, who's the expert in the house? Are you the genetic expert? Is John the genetic? Where did your knowledge and background and trying to keep track of all these genetics and then market them?
Well, my experience growing up was definitely with Simmental cattle. And so John has had so many more years of me being involved in the Hereford breed. And so he loves pedigrees and can really go back and look at those pedigrees. So I think he really understands those pedigrees well. We also, EPDs are something that we both take a look at together.
And the EPD is what? Got to help me out on that one.
Yep, it's an acronym for expected progeny difference. So essentially, they are numbers that are helping you predict different things like calving ease, growth rate, marbling. So it's helping you understand really the genetics and what is underneath the hide. And the American Hereford Association puts out breed averages. And for us, you know, sometimes people hear the word average and they think, well, average isn't very good. But for us, we really are trying to hit those averages and not hit the extremes. And I think that creates more of a well-balanced animal. And it keeps us more kind of in the middle of that barometer than being really extreme one side to the other. And then there's also another technology that we can take advantage of, which is DNA testing. And they can then take that DNA data and incorporate that into those EPDs, those expected progeny differences, to give us even more accurate information of what's underneath that hide.
Interesting. So I guess I'll tie you back to the first thing we discussed. You mentioned relationships. You mentioned how that's nobody's buying from all those posters and catalogs that are sitting outside the show ring advertising someone's genetics. Have you made any sales from Instagram? Have you been able to establish any relationships and get that person to come to the farm and head away with some genetics that they're looking for, or a mama cow?
We have. Again, it's just a way for us to expand our audience, and people have been able to see the quality of cattle that we have at our operation, but then they also get to know John and I through our social media. So with mine, Crystal Cattle, and then John is JJB Cattle Co. on Instagram, and then we have our Facebook pages. They get to see, again, that combination of what that animal is going to look like, and then also get to know us a little bit more. Now, I'm not saying that print advertising is dead. You know, we still take out the ad in the Hereford World, and we still use sale catalogs, but I think in any marketing program now, it has to be a little bit more robust, and you need to be targeting, you know, different channels. You can't just be focusing only on one area.
Where'd your marketing acumen come from?
Well, I think I learned a lot naturally from my parents and grandparents. They have been in the cattle business, and I remember my mom and dad taught us at a young age, you know, how to be able to answer the house phone, because there was no such thing as cell phones then, and to be able to take a bull buyer's name and number down and be polite. And I remember one day coming into the house and listening to my sister, you know, the potential buyer on the other end decided to ask her a few more questions. And so she was going on at, you know, 6 years old, telling them all about
six?
The bulls.
Oh my goodness,
so,
that's incredible.
Which I think is actually a great lesson. If you're ever on a farm and you really want to know the truth, start asking the kids the questions, because they'll let you know. They'll tell you anything about the farm. So really, you know, I would say from watching my parents and seeing how they interacted with our customers. And I think then I love through the junior livestock programs, they have a lot of opportunities through their contests, like sales talk or sales marketing, where you come up kind of with a scenario on how you want to sell your product. So it might be a heifer that day, or it might be a bull to a prospective buyer who's also the judge, and he goes through and asks you a series of questions and you give your sales pitch. And I remember again doing that from a very young age and just getting that experience of talking to an adult and sharing your story and sharing why you're so confident in your product. I think gave me a lot of knowledge and confidence for where I am today.
I love it. If you want to know what's going on, ask the kid the question. That's so true. That is, the kids are the unvarnished versions of ourselves.
Yes,
mine included. The industry that you're trying to be involved with, that would you say when you talk about marketing and making sure that people know who you are, do you think you're kind of the norm? I mean, you talk about you're trying to get the genetics in that average. Do you think most businesses that are similar to yours are doing what you're doing with social media and outreach and relationships? I mean, is that become the norm for farms?
I would say for those that are seeing a lot of success, that is becoming more of the norm. It's becoming a way that you can really differentiate yourself. I think there's still a lot of those in agriculture that they're raising a good product, but they've decided that on this day is sale day, and so we're selling our animals, and what we get is what we get. And unfortunately, I don't think you're going to be able to financially capitalize on all the hard work that you've put into your product by marketing them that way. You know, I think it's the same thing, and I will say, like, my experience is definitely on the cattle side. But I watch my husband, you know, with grain marketing and ask a lot of questions about that. And I think, you know, it's the same thing. By looking at those markets and establishing those relationships, they can get a lot more for their product than just loading up, you know, the trailer and driving to the elevator and saying, okay, what do you want to give me for my product today?
Right.
So by having those relationships and by taking advantage of some of these different marketing aspects, I think we can put more money into our bottom line. And ultimately, I think that's a great definition of sustainability. I know sustainability is a little bit of a buzzword, but our farm has to be financial stable for mm-hmm. us to continue to move forward and hopefully pass it down to another generation someday.
I think for years on this television show, we've talked about niche markets, and I won't call what you're doing a niche, but it's making your way in a crowded field. You know, that's to stand out, to allow you to do business. I mean, that's flat out good business right there.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that a lot of the people that follow John and I don't have any kind of background in agriculture. And I think it's really allowed them to get to know a farmer and the person that is potentially raising, you know, the food product that they are consuming. And I think that's a really important aspect of what we're doing also.
Okay. So you have a choice on what you can post this afternoon on Instagram. Is it a post updating what's going on with the farm, or is it going to be some makeup tips to help me out?
I would say that probably about every third day you're going to get something about the farm.
every third day on the farm.
Yeah, and then you're going to get you might get my favorite lipstick that day. You might get something that I have read that's really inspirational. You might get something that's with my other business, which is a jewelry business called Keep Collective. My crystal cattle is really about the life of a farm girl, but everything else that comes with it. And I would say on my Crystal Cattle account, I have a good chunk of my followers that are not involved with agriculture at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they have really come there because we've formed a connection through fashion or business or women supporting women. And then they are also learning that I farm and that I raise cattle. And the thing that I have really learned with, being an advocate for agriculture is that if people wanted to know about cows or farming every day, they would become a farmer. And they don't want to know about it every day. What they want to know is they want to know that I'm there and available to ask their question when they're ready to ask it.
So have you had discussions? I see some folks, I won't say attacked, but they get some comments of like, how could you do this to the animal? That's poor. That's this and that. Have you ever had somebody come at you that way?
I have been, kind of in this agriculture advocacy realm for 10 plus years. It really started with my blog, Crystal Cattle, which I don't write nearly as much as I used to. I find it's a lot easier to take a quick picture on Instagram and mm-hmm. post it or create a story than writing that full length blog post. But over the years, yes, I have definitely had those comments. I would say I feel like it's slowed down a little bit. So I don't know if I'm flying under the radar as much anymore, or they just know that my community is a place for conversations and discussion. And I am more than willing to talk to anybody about agriculture, but I have to be open about hearing their concerns, and they have to be open about the answers that I'm providing from them. So it's truly a conversation. If it's not a conversation, it's not going to happen on my social media.
And you're done. And I'm not saying you'd block them, but you're moving on, because clearly you can tell they don't want to listen to what you have to say. And that's not going to be helpful for educating people, is what I'm gathering what you're saying.
That is exactly right.
Okay. When you do get those types of people converted, or they see some light, does it feel like it's all worth it?
It absolutely does. And my biggest thing has always been that I want people to have choice. So if you as a consumer want to purchase organic, if you want to purchase from a small farmer, if you want to walk to Walmart and get your groceries, that is awesome. I want you to be able to have the choice to do any of that. However, I also want to be able to have the choice on how we can responsibly raise our products. And so if that means that my veterinarian and I have discussed an animal that is sick and that we need to provide an antibiotic, I want to be able to have the choice to do that. And so I want to be respectful of their choices. And then I also ask for respect for our choices. And I'm more than willing to help them understand why we are making those choices on our farm.
Earlier today, you had posted you were going to be on a panel. I think it's Empower Her. Is that an ag organization or something else?
It is not an ag organization.
Okay. So
it's a
go ahead. Group of, I'll follow up with that in a minute. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. It's a group of women based in Cedar Rapids that they started this networking organization, and they meet once a month. There's all kinds of different business owners in it, some with more corporate backgrounds, some own their own business, some might be in the social selling fields. And this is an event that they're having that's an educational event this weekend on social media, and I'll be one of the presenters.
So when you have opportunities like that, are you more excited about the non-farm opportunities so you can talk about the farm?
Absolutely. I love being able to find unique ways to introduce people to farming and to really let them know I'm a farmer. There's so many times that, you know, when I walk in a room and, you know, I have heels on and a cute outfit and makeup and jewelry done, and then I tell people I'm a farmer, and you can see these question marks pop up over their head because I don't look like a farmer. But I think that's an incredible opportunity to let them know that somebody like me, I can love fashion as much as they do, but then I can also love and our farm and raising cattle as, you know, our way of life also. And so what I love about that is that because I look like them and they think I'm acting like them, they immediately become more comfortable with me. And so they are more likely to ask me their questions about food and farming because we have found this mutual connection.
And the mission completion then on
yes.
being able to talk to a new audience about your passion and livelihood. That's in a town that's not that far away, less than an hour away in the, quote, big city of Cedar Rapids.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes before it was the big cities that didn't know about agriculture. But I think if we look at our small communities, we are finding more and more people that are very removed from agriculture. I know that there are hundreds of people in Independence that have no connection to agriculture. And our town is approximately 6,000 people. So I find myself having conversations about food and farming within our own small community. So as you're thinking about how you can tell your agriculture story, it doesn't mean driving to the big city to go and find those people to visit with. You can easily have those conversations within your small town or within your family. We just recently celebrated Easter, and I think about, you know, when we're all at the kitchen table with our family, and, you know, maybe you have that cousin or sister-in-law that has decided that, you know, almond milk is the best route to go for her family. I think, you know, that can be a way to start a conversation about why they're making those specific milk choices, or, you know, why they're buying organic or non-organic, you know, produce at the grocery store, and what's the difference. And so there's can always be lots of conversations, even within your families or your small community.
Crystal, I thank you so very much for the time. And the company is JJB Cattle Co. And you can find really much about whatever you want, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram, at Crystal Cattle. That's with a C. Do I get your channels right?
That's correct.
All right. Crystal, thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great afternoon.
Hey, we'd love to hear some feedback from you. Drop us a line at markettomarket@iptv.org so we can tell you about an exclusive thing coming to listeners of this podcast. Some pretty cool stuff that you can only get right here by listening to the M2M podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.